is crackling, everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look at the Desert Classic for PGA DFS, breaking down which golfers we are targeting for this weekend. My name is Jim Sonnis. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gandula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, we are back in the swing of things for PGA DFS, going to an interesting course setup for this week with a couple of different courses in the rotation. How are you doing today?
Yeah, interesting is one way to put it. This is the sponsorless event. It's at three courses. Only one of them is equipped with ShotLink. I think only one of them even has cameras. So it's a pretty frustrating follow. And it's extra hard if you look ahead on the schedule. There are a lot of great courses and great events coming up. So it's going to be hard to get through this week, but it's still going to be fun because we have FanDuel to play.
Absolutely. And I think that adds an interesting component for this week. This formerly was called the Career Builder Challenge. So if you're looking for like course history stats, go to the Career Builder Challenge if you're looking at past years. Now the Desert Classic with no sponsor, as Brandon mentioned. There are three different courses they will play this weekend. One of them is the TPC Stadium course at PGA West. That is 7,113 yards. It is a par 72, as with the other two courses. That's the Nicklaus Tournament course, 7,159 yards, and the La Quinta Country Club, which is 7,060 yards. Again, all three of those are par 72s. This is the fourth year where they have used these three specific courses for the event. So if you're looking for the most relevant course history data, that will come from the 2016, 2017, and 2018 years. Though they have used the other two courses, the Nicklaus course and the La Quinta course, in previous years. The Stadium course was the one that was added 3 years ago. So for me personally, I'm looking almost exclusively at those 3 years to try to get a look at course data. Brandon, are you willing to look further back than that, or does that get a little bit too muddy for you?
Yeah, it starts to get muddy, but also, again, without the shot link, we don't really have reliable strokes gain data that we can look into. So it's more just sort of playing the course. And I mean, you really can't go wrong with targeting good ball strikers on pretty much any course. And as well, just looking more at recent form than course and event history, especially when things get, you know, weird like this. You have three different courses. The cut rule is obviously different, so it can be hard to differentiate between, you know, who got a tough draw on round one of, you know, whatever year it was, relative to a different golfer who had better waves for him. So it gets to be a bit too many variables for me. So I tend to sort of downplay it whenever that's the case.
Absolutely. You mentioned the cut rule being different. And for this weekend, the cut will occur after the third round. So all golfers will get a crack at all three courses. So you don't need to weigh it from that perspective. You could play them in waves based on the courses that they're playing, but based on the weather forecasts for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, none of those days appear extra windy or extra moist. So I don't think it'll make a huge difference to do things that way. So personally, I'm probably not going to care too much about tee times personally and just kind of roll things out there. You can maybe take a little bit extra risk given that the cut is one day later, but still getting those Sunday scores will be critical. So finding golfers who will make the cut in what is a large field. There are more than 150 golfers here this weekend. You need guys who are going to make the cut, and that is going to be a difficult task for sure. Brandon, any additional things you're looking at for this week from a statistical perspective based on this specific tournament?
Yeah, I mean, like, again, this one's tough because just one of the courses has shot link data, so it's very hard to dig back into prior years. But we do know La Quinta was the easiest course on the tour last year. The Nicklaus course was second easiest. The Stadium course ranked 36th in difficult out of 52 courses played. So with having that be the case, we know that we need golfers who can score. If you look at the past winners, everyone is basically 20 under or even better than that. But again, For stats this week, I'm looking at ball striking again like I did last week, like I sort of do most weeks. That means strokes gained approach is going to be my number one stat again this week. Also looking into greens in regulation gained and strokes gained off the tee. So a lot of ball striking stats. For me, in my process, good drive rate popped as well. But, you know, that's sort of just, you know, it's fairways hit, it's greens in regulation saved, basically. So it's just, it's a lot of the same stats, and we have to be mindful not to give weight to too many of the same stats. So other than that, really, I'm just looking at some strokes gained putting on Bermuda splits. We have overseeded Bermuda greens this week. That's really kind of the angle that I'm playing there. So it's really just sort of playing it straight down the middle for me. Strokes gained approach, greens in regulation gained, strokes gained off the tee, and Bermuda splits on with the putter.
Yeah, for me, when looking back at past events, looking back at the past three when they've had this current configuration, driving distance actually popped up for me. Good drive rate did more so than usual, but driving distance was a key one. Last year in 2018, the median ranking in driving distance for the full season for the golfers who finished in the top 20 was 46th, and it was 116th for driving accuracy. And that was true in previous years as well. So I am weighing in driving distance once again this week, which is key, Brandon, because Luke List back this weekend. So get excited about that. So driving distance is playing for me. And then strokes gained approach and then scrambling. Other ones I'm looking at here, because there are some, I believe, some interesting, there's some interesting sand on this course too. So if you want to have good scramblers as well. So a tiny bit different process for us this week, or it sounds like I may be weighting distance a bit more, but overall it sounds like the same thing where you want guys who can strike the ball well.
Yeah. And again, that's just sort of the way that I play it most weeks. I think strokes gained approach has really become just the stat that I value more than anything, because for the most part, if you're tracking, you know, there are various sites where you can track live strokes gained. Now it really comes down to approach.
Yeah.
Approach just accounts for, you know, the majority of the strokes gained information. And, you know, if you can find out who, if you know in advance who's going to lead the field, you know, in strokes gained approach, you could just bet those guys every week and you probably win in the long run.
You also probably don't need to listen to us if you can figure that out. So I would advise you to spend your time more wisely if that is the case. We'll talk about golfers who have done well at this event in just one second. But first, with the NFL playoffs winding down, do not forget about FanDuel's new small fixtures, including both single games and second half only and even fourth quarter only slates. They'll have contests running for every playoff game now through the Super Bowl, starting this Sunday with the NFL Conference Championships. To see the games, go to the FanDuel lobby, click on single game, and check out the various slates that they are offering. FanDuel.com, partial fixtures for the NFL playoffs. Let's take a look at some golfers who have done well at the Desert Classic in the past and its previous iterations. Again, for me personally, I'm putting more weight on what guys have done over the past 3 years, but data beyond that also still at least relevant. Brandon, let's start off with one of the favorites for this weekend. That is Charles Howell III. He is $11,100 on FanDuel and a guy who has done well here in the past. And the recent form for Howell, not bad either.
Yeah, Howell is sort of one of the big four golfers this week, along with Justin Rose, John Rahm, and Patrick Cantlay. And kind of what separates him from most of the rest of the pack, I'm not saying from the top four, is just steady course form. He finished 58th and 56th in 2014 and 2015, so before that shift. But then followed it up with an 11th, a 12th, and a 20th the past 3 years. Howell, of course, also has some strong finishes the past three events. He won the RSM, 14th at the Tournament of Champions, 8th last week at the Sony Open. He's cheaper than Rose, who's $12,100, so he's $1,000 cheaper than Justin Rose. John Rahm's $11,900. Patrick Cantlay's $11,300. You know, Howell doesn't really have the ball-striking prowess that those three do. I'm kind of having some trouble placing Howell, but I do think that I'm lower on him then maybe consensus seems to be. So Jim, any thoughts for you on Charles Howell III, particularly in terms of how he stacks up among the top four?
Yeah, so I think if you're looking at this from a tiered perspective at the top end, I'd have Rahm and Rose kind of by themselves personally, and then Cantlay, I think it's also by himself, and then it's Howell. The one thing that does help Howell and potentially push him towards Cantlay's tier is that I am valuing guys who have played here before, maybe not, you know, have had success. I don't really care as much about that, but I want them to be familiar with the three different courses. And I also do like golfers who have golfed within the past 2 weeks. And of those top four guys, Howell and Rahm are the only two who have played here, who have played here recently, and are the only two who have played within the past 2 weeks. So I think that that pushes Howell a little bit higher on my list, but I don't think it's high enough to justify the opportunity cost of him when it means that I will be getting one less golfer between the trio of Rahm, Rose, and Cantlay. So for me, it's kind of more of a big three scenario and a big two scenario than it is a big four. And I think that that keeps me low enough on Howell where I'm probably not going to go there despite the fact that he does have two things that I am valuing for this weekend.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, and I don't really think that's a hot take or anything like that. We're not trying to say that it is, but
right.
I think that the big deciding factor for me is just sort of the approach, the off the tee play, so the ball striking there. Over the past 36 rounds, according to FantasyNational.com, Rose is 8th in approach, Rahm's 24th, Cantlay's 3rd, and Howell is 50th. So really, that's kind of the big deciding factor. I know that the recent form's been there. I know the recent form has actually been recent, so that's a plus. But I do think that I don't really anticipate myself having too much Charles Howell this weekend.
One guy who could have a similar discussion here is Adam Hadwin, who is my first golfer discussing here in what he has done at this event in the past. And Hadwin, in the past 3 years, with this tournament being in its format, Hadwin has mopped up in all three events and has actually finished better than Howell in all three of those, which may lead to an interesting discussion about the 1v1 there. It started for Hadwin in 2016 with a sixth place finish here, followed it up with a second in 2017 and then a third last year. And the reason he finished second in 2017 was that he shot a 59 on Saturday, but shot a 70 on Sunday to wind up finishing second. His only round that wasn't under par was on Sunday back in 2016, and he was even par on that one. So he is $10,700, Brandon. That means that you could potentially use him in conjunction with Cantlay, Rose, Rahm, which is kind of the same discussion we would have with Charles Howell III. Is he doing enough for you to justify foregoing one of those big three?
I think that if I'm going to spend in that range, it's not going to be on Hadwin. I'll talk about some other guys later on, but Hadwin doesn't really do it for me. The long-term approach, you know, like the irons just aren't really there. The past few rounds, it's not there enough for me to get overly excited. So I get a little bit hesitant with Adam Hadwin, who's for the most part reliant on his putter, and I don't really care to target guys who sort of do need a hot putter to hit their ceiling.
And with Hadwin too, I'm favoring distance. And I know he's done well here in the past, but he's 125th in the field in driving distance over the past 50 rounds, according to Fantasy National. He's not long off the tee. And there are guys who are a little bit cheaper than him who are, and guys a little bit more expensive than him who are as well. So I think that that really does make me wary of buying into the course history. Again, I don't really care as much if golfers have done well here. I care more if I can explain why they have done well and if they've just kind of been here in general. And I think that that's why I will likely be out on both Hadwin and Howell for this weekend. Let's move now to some cheaper golfers, Brandon, starting off with Hudson Swafford. Short betting odds for this week. He is 50-1, despite being just $8,200 on FanDuel, and Swafford, a former winner at this event.
Yeah, Swafford is going to be a popular play this week. That much is a guarantee. He finished third last week at the Sony Open. You know, you mentioned just $8,200, so that's certainly a start. But he finished third last week because he ranked sixth in strokes gained approach. He did gain strokes on the Bermuda greens, but he wasn't just carried by a hot putter. He was a former winner here in 2017, as you mentioned. And over the past 5 years, Swafford's finished 25th, cut, 56th, first, and 29th. So that's three top 30s, four or five made cuts at $8,200. At that salary, we don't need a win. but he has done that here. Coming off a great approach week, I think everyone is going to have some interest in Hudson Swafford. What about for you, Jim?
I think because he's so cheap, I like him. But I think that the thing that you mentioned with the ownership is a little bit concerning, because if you look at golfers who are, I guess, like in that same pricing range, none of them are going to have the odds as short as Swafford. And I think when I look at Swafford, the current form, like you mentioned, is good. It's good, but it's not impeccable. The approach game is not impeccable either. So I think that Swafford is one of those golfers who, when I'm playing cash games, I will probably be very okay with, but I would also be very okay gravitating away from him in tournaments. What about for you?
I mean, I think he makes sense for cash games for sure. For tournaments, I mean, you're really, if he's going to be, I mean, let's say 30% realistically, could be a bit higher than that, could be a bit lower, but it does seem like everyone is already discussing Swafford, and the salary is just so low that he hopes you spend up for two, or, you know, I haven't even tried this, but possibly three studs this week. So I think that he's going to be very popular. So that does give merit to fading in tournaments. Generally, chalky players, chalky golfers don't pan out. I did a study on that, but it really just comes down to the fact that golf's so volatile that if you think someone is going to be way more popular than he should be, you can just be underweight or fade, and you have an advantage. It doesn't always work out, but
right.
I think Swafford could be a very good tournament fade this week.
All right, that's where I'm at as well. So let's talk about another past winner here. That's Jonathan Vegas. And Vegas won here before the current configuration. That was back in 2011, but he's also had some decent finishes here since they switched things up to the current course configuration. Vegas, the first time around in 2016, did miss the cut, thanks largely to a 74 in the first round, but rebounded by finishing 34th in 2017 despite a 75 on Friday. Then put together four solid rounds last year and finished 11th there. This is Vegas's first event, though, since the Mayakoba, and did make the cut there. He also made the cut at the Shriners. Brandon, Vegas a little bit more expensive than Hudson Swafford, as he is $8,600. He is in the same range as some of my favorite value plays for this weekend. So does Vegas do enough to be on your radar this weekend at $8,600?
Okay, so I just talked about the volatility of golf, and anything can really happen, but, you know, I don't like to be dismissive of any players, but I don't really see any reason that I would play Jonathan Vegas. I'm very into the low or sub 9,000 range. There are about five golfers who I actually sort of actively like, and I just don't see enough from Vegas. He can definitely gain strokes off the tee. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of where his prowess kind of ends, at least from what I see.
Yeah, I think for me, that would be enough to get me to be interested in a vacuum, where if a guy's $8,600, he's 11th in distance over the past 50 rounds. He's made some cuts recently. He has done well at this course in the past. He does check enough boxes, but the problem is I don't need to play him in a vacuum. I've got other guys who are around his salary who I like quite a bit. So I am interested in Vegas, but I think the fact that there are other golfers who are either his exact same price, 86, or a little bit more expensive at 87 or 88, I can avoid him. And it's not a situation where I need to sprinkle him in either, because I think that I can sprinkle in those other guys. There are just enough guys in that range who I really do like, where I think I can probably avoid Johnny Vegas. So I think in general, the thought process here from us for this week is we're not putting a ton of weight in course history. I know that, like, again, we've mentioned that we do want guys who have, or at least I did, I want guys who have been here, physically been here at some point and seen these courses. But if they haven't done well, it's not necessarily going to scare me completely off of all of these guys. So with that said, let's move into the current form section, something both of us do value more, and talk about those top three guys with John Rahm, Justin Rose, and Patrick Cantlay. Sort out our thoughts all those three guys. Brandon, let's start here with Justin Rose. We haven't seen him in quite some time, but when he was golfing earlier, dude was just liquid hot. So what do you see with Justin Rose from a current form perspective?
Yeah, Rose is the most expensive golfer of the week on FanDuel. He is the world's number one ranked golfer by the official World Golf Rankings. He finished third at the Hero World Challenge. That was 7 weeks ago. He was 17th at the Indonesian Masters 5 weeks ago. He's missed just three cuts since the start of the 2017 calendar year. Since his most recent missed cut, which was at the Northern Trust, he finished second at the Dell Technologies Championship, second at the BMW Championship, fourth at the Tour Championship, eighth at the British Masters, third at the WGC HSBC, first at the Turkish Airlines Open, again, third at the Hero, and 17th at the Indonesian Masters. If you just look at the recent form, the floor of not missing cuts, it's very, very easy to make the case for Justin Rose. But he has changed his irons recently. And if you look at the sort of the upcoming schedule, I alluded to it at the top of the show, but I mean, there are some great events that lead pretty much nonstop into the Masters. And with this being, you know, this is a pro-am. It's not the toughest field. It's the three-course rotation. He's got new irons. I mean, he could be sort of treating this as just a tune-up spot. Mm-hmm. We don't know for sure. I have a few concerns with Justin Rose from that standpoint then. But Jim, are you seeing anything from Justin Rose that gets you to be a bit wary, or are you sort of all in because his form has just been so good over the long?
Yeah, I think the question is like, where you view him relative to Rom, basically. And yeah. I think that those concerns for Justin Rose are super valid, and I value all of them because, like, they are like, if we come back on Monday and think, okay, Justin Rose busted, why? It's probably going to be a combination of things you discuss. Like, that, there's a very good path to that. But for John Rahm, there's always that same concern, I guess. And my concerns around Justin Rose are generally lower than my concerns around John Rahm, who we know is a pretty volatile golfer and just has been on the high end of the volatility recently and has done so for a very long time. Like, he's a very good golfer, but we know that the floor for him is a little bit lower. The approach play is not as good. Not as good when he gets into trouble either. So I think that that for me, I wind up viewing Justin Rose a hair higher than Rom, but that could also be a very cautious way of playing it. And I'm playing it cautious, even though there are some legit causes for concern for Rose. So I think that there are holes in my reasoning behind putting Rose above Rom, but I still think there is enough there for me to do so. What about for you?
I prefer Rom straight up.
Okay.
It's close if you look at things sort of straight up, but just using like the logic of the fact that, I mean, look, Justin Rose changed his irons. I don't think that's a small thing. This is sort of where we've seen, you know, John Rahm has a win at the Hero lately, eighth at the Tournament of Champions. So he's actually like played a little bit more recently, mm-hmm. Last year's winner at this event. So I think that this could be one of those spots where Justin Rose is fine figuring out his irons on three different courses, and whatever happens, happens. Not that he's going to, you know, just be
right
trying things that he doesn't need to do, but I think this could be a spot where John Rahm tries to pick up some momentum moving into the early start of 2019 as he gears up for the Masters.
So if you're filling out a cash game roster, you would lean more towards Rahm, plugging him in first over Rose, correct?
I feel that both are very, very far above the rest of the field.
Agreed.
And I feel that John Rahm is going to treat this event with utmost importance.
Whereas Rose may not.
I cannot guarantee that Justin Rose does that.
All right, so let's talk about the third guy in this little trio here, and Patrick Cantlay, and try to decipher if he can be in that tier with those two guys. We haven't seen him golf on a full slate since the Shriners, so it's kind of out of sight, out of mind for Cantlay, but that should change this week because he was crazy hot before the layoff. Cantlay was second at the Shriners, then followed it up by finishing fifth at the Hero World Challenge. And that's pretty good, but it's also the worst among all golfers in this field because only he, Rahm, and Rose were at that event. Rahm won, Rose is second, Cantlay was fifth. Cantlay was second at the Shriners again, so that gave him three straight top 10 finishes after a seventh at the WGC HSBC. He has five straight top 25, so kind of similar to Rose, where he's been really good, but back in the fall. Cantlay has not missed a cut since last year's Fort Worth Invitational. So he's really good. But Brandon, I think the discussion is, do we try to find the $600 to get both Rahm and Rose in there? Or are we okay picking one of those two and plugging in Cantlay for the second spot?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. If I look just at the stats that I'm favoring and just sort of the sample that I generally like to use, Cantlay I have ranked first among the field. He is third in approach over the past 36 rounds. He's second in greens and regulation gained, third in strokes gained off the tee. He's had better putting splits than Rose and Rahm on Bermuda over the past 100 rounds. The big issue for Cantlay is potential rust. He has not played for 7 weeks. That's really kind of the deciding factor. But I do think that, you know, he's $800 cheaper than Justin Rose, $600 cheaper than John Rahm. I think that all things considered, it's close enough between Rose and Cantlay where I might prefer Cantlay just sort of straight up with the savings that I can get. Okay. I don't think that I have to do that because there, you know, Hudson Swafford's there. There are some cheaper plays. So it's not like Justin Rose is priced out. But I think $800 still goes a long way this week.
And you would agree with me in putting Cantlay in a tier above Howell, correct?
I do personally, yes.
Okay, that's where I am at as well. So kind of, it sounds like we're along the same lines here as far as the top four or five go, but with Rose and Rahm flip, where I have Rose first and Rahm, Brandon has Rahm first there. Let's move now to some golfers who will save you a little bit of salary, starting off with Brandon. Ryan Armour got out to a pretty slow start last week, but hey, he made it through and wound up finishing 22nd. What do you see with Ryan Armour in his current form?
Yeah, it's your boy. I figured I would run him by you and see.
You know,
see what
let's not quite go there. Especially not this week.
All right. So, yeah, 8,200. His past three events have all been top 25 finishes, which is pretty nice for his price tag of 8,200. He was 21st at the OHL, 15th at the RSM, 22nd at the Sony last week. So, you know, that means he has a recent event in that sample as well, coming last week at the Sony. It's actually not the case for about half the field. It's just still that time of year where there's been a layoff for a lot of these guys. Armour does have poor form here. Missed the cut, 66th in cut the past 4 years, but he's a usable 39th in strokes gained approach over the past 36 rounds, according to fantasynational.com. I don't think that he's a terrible play. I don't think that he is my favorite sort of option by any means in the sub $9,000 range, but Jim, I won't call him your boy, but you're still the Armour guy between the two of us. Yeah. Do you have a read on him this week?
Yeah, so it's a very easy flow chart with me, with Ryan Armour. And the question is, am I valuing driving distance? If yes, no Ryan Armour. If no, I will consider him. And I am valuing driving distance this week. Armour, 141st in the field over the past 50 rounds.
I love it.
Sorry.
Keep going. I'll follow up.
Go ahead. It's just funny. All I needed to say, basically.
It's funny. Does driving distance matter? If no, or if yes, then no Ryan Armour. If it doesn't matter, maybe. So it's like no or a maybe, or like if I have to, basically.
Yeah. And then the second question is, if after the maybe is, am I desperate? If the answer is yes, Ryan Armour. And last week I happened to be desperate. I did use, you know, a non-zero number of shares of Ryan Armour. So like he happened to fit that flow chart last week. And a lot of times in the fall where we're not at a lot of distance courses, then I do wind up using Ryan Armour. But just based on my process, I think the distance does matter for this week. So, and there are guys in this salary tier who can kind of, you know, they can ping it a little bit. So I think for me, that means no Ryan Armour. But I know, Brandon, you seem to like this $8,200 or the low 8,000 range more than I do. Is he one of the guys on the list for you or no?
I mean, like realistically, I'll just rattle off, you know, four names I like: Corey Connors, Sungjae Im, Dylan Fratelli. They're all at least 8,600. Hudson Swafford
too.
Yeah, Hudson Swafford is 82, the same price. I mean, realistically, I don't play hundreds of lineups, so I don't play hundreds of golfers or anything. So I don't think he does enough for me, but he is an interesting case based on what he's done. He's been consistent. His price is low. So I just wanted to float him out there.
Yeah. Corey Connors is like sexy Ryan Armour, where he has the approach game, but he also can get it long off the tee. So I'll be talking more about him later on, $8,700. Let's talk about a golfer we discussed last week in Patton Kizzire. Been racking up some pretty good finishes recently, and that did continue last week at the Sony Open, where Kizzire finished 13th. He has now three straight top 15s to open January after he was also 8th at the Tournament of Champions. And Kizzire made 10 straight cuts. He's got five top 25s in that span, including, again, now three in a row. So, Brandon, the price went up on Kizzire. He is $9,400. So, do you got the desire for Kizzire at the Desert Classic? The Burgoon pontoon flips. We're going to go with this. With
Kizzire. Yeah, Burgoon's here this week, too.
Yeah, he's messing with my spreadsheets again, trying to draw me back in.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that siren song, though.
Yeah, I like Kizzire. I mean, last week he gained strokes in every facet at the Sony to finish 13th. He didn't really gain many strokes off the tee or many strokes with his approach. Was better around the green and putting, and around the green play is usually the one stat you can overlook. That's sort of especially the case this week. If anything, you need to sort of be a pin seeker and have good proximity to the hole, but I couldn't really back that up with too many correlations and statistics. Again, shot link is not available on all three of the courses here, so it's kind of tough. But the around the green, the short game doesn't really impress me much. So I think Kizzire does enough at his price.
Yeah.
He's still on my list. I guess that's what I'll say.
Yeah, I think he is for me too. I think there are a couple of guys in that mid 9,000 range who I like quite a bit, and Kizzire is one of them. Just because the guys in that range have a combination of decent stats, acceptable stats at least. They have acceptable salaries. They've been here before, and they've golfed the past 2 weeks. And I like all those things. So I think that Kizzire is a guy I will definitely use, and am very willing to use, and definitely on my list. There are other guys in that range too, and I'll talk about one of them in Scott Piercy during the player picks. But I think Kizzire definitely does fit what I'm looking for this specific event, so he'll be on my rosters for sure. Let's slide on now to the bookmaker info for this week, where John Rahm is currently the favorite. According to Betfair, he is 7-1 to win. Justin Rose, right behind him, he is 8-1. Then a massive drop-off, kind of what we've been talking about throughout this podcast. Patrick Cantlay, basically by himself, he is 18-1. Charles Howell III is next up at 25-1. Then you got both Adam Hadwin and Aaron Wise. They're 28-1. Andrew Putnam rounds up the top group. He is 30-1 for this week. So, Brandon, when you look at Rahm and Rose sitting so far beyond everybody else, does that push you towards building more lineups in which you have both those guys and then just figure things out from there?
Yeah, it could. Or Rahm and Cantlay, or even Rose and Cantlay. I think that's a viable way to go. We both seem to be in agreement that there are some low-priced picks that we do like. And even if you start your lineups with Justin Rose and John Rahm on FanDuel, you have $9,000 left to fill out, per golfer for your final four. Mm-hmm. If you roster two, in that 8,000 range, you can really make that work. So I think that it's a viable approach. I don't necessarily I wouldn't bet Justin Rose to win. I sure. Also wouldn't bet John Rahm to win because that price is just – It's too short, but with those being where they are, and just the knowledge of how much better they are than the rest of the field, mm-hmm. they can finish top 15 no problem. And so that very much puts them in play. If you have both of them and they both come through, that is going to be pretty crucial, especially if you hit on the right value picks, because this almost feels like a week where some of these value picks are gonna just go off so maybe it's a week where you plug in Rose, Rahm, and or Cantlay, you cycle in those and kind of lock them in and sprinkle in your value picks.
Yeah, I think that that's probably a pretty viable strategy for this week. I think that the other thing with those two guys is if you're concerned about ownership, and you should be because they're both very popular, but if you're concerned the ownership on Rahm, let's say it's 40%, let's say Rose is also 40%, that means that the ownership on the two of them in the same lineup will be lower than that. So that's one way you can kind of combat, you know, chalky golfers is by differentiating there and then differentiating in your final four slots too. So certainly can help combat some ills with those guys by doing that. What lower salary golfers, Brandon, have odds that stand out to you as of Tuesday morning?
So according to Betfair, Patton Kizzire and Sung Ji Im are 41-1. Hudson Swafford at 8,200 is 46-1. Then some golfers at 51-1, Siwoo Kim, Peter Uihlein, Charles Schwartzel, Danny Willett, 61-1, CT Pond and Corey Connors, 67, Dylan Fratelli. Among those who have pretty solid win odds for their lower prices, I like Kizzire fine. I like Sung Ji Im, Swafford. I like CT Pond a bit. Corey Connors, the as you put it, the sexy Ryan Armour, and Dylan Fratelli.
Yeah, Fratelli was your boy last week, and I don't recall 51st. He made the cut.
He was nothing special.
But he made the cut, which is more than Sam Ryder can say. So I felt the burn of that one. But
yeah, I mean he finished 51st despite losing strokes with his, you know, on approach and with the putter. So take that for what you will.
Yes, exactly. We'll get to our player picks in just 1 second. Weather for this weekend, though, I would say as of Tuesday morning, nothing of note outside of a slight chance of some rain on Thursday. All throughout the day, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot here. So personally, I am not leaning towards, you know, stacking in waves, you know, based on when guys will be at certain courses. If the weather changes before Thursday, maybe you change that up. But for me personally, not a huge priority for this weekend. So let's close up here with our player picks for the Desert Classic. Brandon, starting off in the high end, you've got Rahm, I've got Rose. Tell me why you want John Rahm.
Well, I mean, according to the fan share tags, it's looking like Rahm is out to a pretty solid early lead among the 3 to 4, you know, high-priced golfers. So that's a bit of a concern, but he's finished 4th at the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai, 1st at the Hero, 8th at the Tournament of Champions over the past 9 weeks. That Tournament of Champions start gives him a recent event, something that Rose and Patrick Cantlay don't actually have. So that is very important for me. Of course, you know, he won here last year, ranks top 6 in both strokes gained off the tee and greens in regulation gained over the past 36 rounds. Straight up in a vacuum, I prefer John Rahm to anyone in the field. Again, that's a pretty safe statement here, but having him $200 cheaper than Justin Rose is, you know, it's going to be interesting because traditionally the most expensive golfer winds up being the most popular golfer. I don't think that's going to be the case this week. It could be. I would hope it would be because I'm still going to be overweight on John Rahm regardless.
All right, so let's talk about Justin Rose here and then get some final thoughts on these two guys. In general, again, I am giving a bump to golfers who have golfed recently because I do like that. A lot of guys have had long layoffs. Justin Rose, one of those guys with a long layoff, but he still seems like, to me at least, he could be the class of the field. Prior to a 17th at the Indonesian Masters, which is Rose's most recent event, which was back in the fall, he had 7 straight top 10s and 6 top 5s in that span. And despite generally facing really good competition in his recent events, Rose still ranks 24th in the field in distance and 9th in approach over the past 50 rounds, according to Fantasy National. I am into Rahm, but it's really hard for me not to love Rose. So, Brandon, when you look at, you know, fan share tags, try to track sentiment for these two guys, how far ahead would Rahm have to be for you to favor Rose over him?
Like double, and that's what he is early on Tuesday.
Okay.
It's still possible. Early. I would have to get the vibe that John Rahm is going to be almost 50% owned, and I don't think that's the case because I do think the people are into Charles Howell more than I am. And that is going to be enough. Also, you can differentiate here because this is going to be kind of a spot where if everyone's playing John Rahm and everyone is playing Hudson Swafford,
right?
The ownership, you know, of that combination will be high, but I can still play John Rahm and then not play Hudson Swafford.
I'd agree with that, and I think I'm getting a similar vibe on Swafford, where if you're going to fade someone, I think he's probably my favorite person to fade in this field right now. So
it just makes sense, yeah. I mean, I can make the case to play him for sure, but I think a lot of people can and a lot of people will, and that's the problem.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on here to our second high price guys. Who else are you targeting, Brandon, above the 10,000 range?
Look, I'm going to stick with Cantlay. I would have gone with your next golfer, but you already had him penciled in, and I don't really care for anyone else. Okay. Sort of above, you know, 10,100 other than the four guys we're talking about here, or at least enough to target them specifically. So I'm going to stick with Cantlay. The rust is the biggest concern because he hasn't played since the Hero, where he finished fifth. But you know, prior to that, he was second at the Shriners, seventh at the WGC HSBC, 17th at the Safeway Open. His ball striking has just been on point over his past 36 rounds. Again, he ranks third in approach and off the tee strokes gained among the field, according to Fantasy National. He's also second in greens and regulation gain in that split. He is a plus putter on Bermuda in his career. I was thinking he'd be shaping up to be a pivot from Rose and Rahm, but he could come in with similar ownership to Justin Rose, and that's fine with me because of the savings.
Yeah, I think that Cantlay to me is good enough where I feel really good about a strategy you discussed where you kind of go through the pairings. And this is something we talk a lot about with NFL, but I want combinations. I want Rahm Cantlay, I want Rahm Rose, I want Rose Cantlay. And I just want to cycle through those combinations and just figure out the rest from there. I think that those three guys are far enough above the rest where I really do want to go there. So for me, I think that that's a pretty attractive strategy for this weekend. The guy Brandon alluded to that I stole from him before he got to the sheet is Joaquin Niemann. And not someone we have discussed yet in this podcast because he's 60-1 to win on Betfair and $10,400. And from a price and odds perspective, that's not great. But I think that there is a lot of really good, there are a lot of good things working for Niemann here that draw me towards him. So Niemann did struggle a bit in the fall. He finished 65th and 60th in his final two events, but he does still lead the field in strokes gained approach over the past 50 rounds, according to Fantasy National. Niemann is also 15th in that time, so I think he could be able to post a really low score here. And I don't think he'll be very popular because the pricing is awkward, given the fact that Rahm, Rose, and Cantlay are all pretty attractive for this weekend. I'm willing to get a bit creative in order to get some exposure to Niemann here, and I think that I can get him in a lineup with as long as Cantlay is my number two guy. So, Brandon, you mentioned you like Niemann. What puts him on your radar this week?
Okay, so he is going to be sort of very difficult to filter through because I think straight up he's overpriced on FanDuel, okay. And I know that, but I'm sort of okay with it. He's cheaper on other sites other than FanDuel, so that's sort of throwing off the sentiment here. With Niemann, his ball striking is so good that eventually things are going to click. Mm-hmm. He's someone I actually would probably be more inclined to bet to win outright than be super heavy on FanDuel just because that price, again, I think he's overpriced. You have Aaron Wise at 10,100, Abe Ansers 99, just a few guys in this range you can definitely make the case for. But, I mean, he's first in the field in strokes gained ball striking. He's sixth in approach, first off the tee. He just can't putt, especially on Bermuda. So that's the problem with Niemann. But you just have to think eventually that ball striking is going to carry him to a very, very good finish. It's done that before for him. He's got some solid finishes. But even at 10,400, I will have some Niemann on my FanDuel lineups.
Yeah, he's very much a tournament-only play for me because that pricing is so weird. But I think that's also going to ensure that he will be very, very unpopular for this weekend. And I think that's pretty attractive for a guy with his stats, with his talent as well. Maybe he worked on the putting in the layoff. I don't know. Maybe we'll get some good Niemann here too.
So, well, he is like 15, so I think he's got some time to grow with the putter.
Yeah. That's very depressing. Please don't ever bring that up again. But
no, he's obviously not that. I think he's, I don't 19. Even want to guess. I'll be wrong, but.
Yeah, he's like 19 or 18, I think. So, like,
that is older than that.
There is room for growth for sure. But I think there is a possibility he blows up, and I want to be in when it happens. So, if he is, you don't have to do a whole lot to be overweight on Joaquin Niemann compared to the field, I don't think. So, to me, pretty interesting guy for this week for sure. Let's move down to the middle tier of pricing, Brandon. Who is standing out to you once we get to around 10,000 or so?
I'm going to go back to Aaron Wise. I liked him a lot a few months back. He's 10,100, 29-1 to win. His recent approach is a weakness. He's 88th among the field over the past 36 rounds. But we know his ball striking overall is just stellar enough. He ranks 9th off the tee, 17th in greens and regulation gained over the past 36. And his irons have been better than 88th over a larger sample. So I'm okay with that, and Wise actually putts pretty well for, you know, relative to his own expectations on Bermuda greens. He has finished 34th and 17th at this event, and those come the past 2 years. He's finished 15th, 10th, 27th over his past three, and the 27th, while not good at the Tournament of Champions, does give him a recent event in there to help with the rust angle. So all things considered, I do like Aaron Wise quite a bit at 10,100.
Yeah, I think that he's another guy who I could see myself, like, if I decide to go with a Cantlay and really take a dive at the value plays, then Aaron Wise does make sense. The problem, Brandon, is that he's the same price as Luke List. It's a distance course. I might prefer Luke List, so why not? Let's give it a little spin. List was sixth here back in 2016. Got a fourth place finish in his last event before his layoff. So why not? A little Luke List action this week. Are you going to use List at all, or is that just me?
He didn't really pop for me necessarily.
Can't imagine why.
Look, we know he can't putt.
Uh-huh.
We get that. He's going to gain strokes off the tee. We pretty much know that. I wouldn't fault you for playing Luke List, but straight up, I would take an Aaron Wise over Luke List bet this week.
You notice that I glossed over the fact that he missed a cut here last year and also missed the cut in his second most recent event. Those never happened. It's only the good things to Luke List.
Hey, was sixth here. He was sixth here in 2016.
He was 41st the year after, too, so that's a made cut, Brandon. He's, you know, we're good.
He's trying to backwards, though.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, I'm out on Luke List now. You convinced me. I talked about Joaquin Niemann before, and I think that the reason I liked him is because I don't expect people to use him because his odds are much longer than his pricing would normally dictate him being. I think that Harold Varner III is kind of in a similar vein where I'm not going to use him outside of tournaments, but I think he's a guy who has some appeal there. Varner, he's 0-3 in making the cut of this event, and he has been here each of the past 3 years. He's missed a cut each three times, but I think he was golfing well enough in the fall where I kind of want to get him at lower ownership. He finished out 2018 by making 10 of his final 11 cuts. In that stretch, he had 3 top 10s, 8 top 25s, including 4 top 25s in a row at the end. Varner is 10th in the field in distance the past 50 rounds, respectable 48th in scrambling. So I kind of think the kind of hope here is that the course record for Varner will scare some people away from him. And I think he kind of seems like a decent play at $9,800. Brandon, I know that, like, there are a lot of reasons you may not want to use Harold Varner III. So are those pushing you away from him here at $9,800?
It's more that I like other golfers in that range. Of course, if we can include Joaquin Niemann, I prefer him straight up, but I prefer Aaron Wise. Abe Anser is 99. I prefer him. I like Ches Reavy at the same price of 9,800. So it's not so much issues with Harold Varner, although I have a few, mostly with the putter. He sort of putted well over his past few solid finishes, and that's just not really what he does. So that's a bit problematic, but I don't think that he is someone who I would, you know, feel the need to talk you out of by any means.
Okay, yeah, I think for me, the big allure is I'm favoring distance this week. looking at it quite a bit, and he does well there and then does well enough elsewhere and then has the recent form when he was golfing earlier or back in the fall and the fact that he's probably not going to be on anyone's list given the course history that he has. I think that those are the reasons that I'm into him. Again, it's kind of like the same discussion with Neiman where I don't need to have a lot in order to be overweight. And I like that quite a bit. So Harold Varner III, going to get some sprinkles for me this weekend. Let's move down a little bit lower in the mid-pricing tier, Brandon. And who is standing out to you once we get to the mid-9,000s or so?
I like Patton Kizzire again at 94. I think that's a good price for him. His approach play ranks him 9th over the past 100 rounds. He is 16th over the past 36 rounds in approach. So that's nice to see. Has been struggling off the tee in the shorter sample, 143rd. So I want to make that much known. But that's just sort of what you get with Patton Kizzire. He's not going to gain strokes off the tee consistently. And again, a strokes gained approach is much more important to me this week, especially than strokes gained off the tee. He's been fine here with a 42nd, 50th, and 42nd. But he's stepped it up of late, 15th at the RSM, 8th at the Tournament of Champions, 13th at the Sony Open. So he's got two recent events in there with two solid finishes. I think that's enough at that price of just 9,400 to get pretty into Kizzire. Again, gained strokes in every facet last week. Mm-hmm. Wasn't great off the tee, which is to be expected. Was okay with the approach. But again, it's better to see some green there than a lot of red.
Yeah, I think that Kizzire is very similar for me to Scott Piercy. So let's talk about Scott Piercy at $9,500. Kind of like Kizzire, not super long off the tee, kind of sits in the middle of the pack there, but the approach game always puts Piercy at least in play for me. He is 16th over the past 50 rounds in approach. He has used that to log 6 straight made cuts. He has finished no worse than 33rd in that time, though the 33rd was last weekend. Piercy also did show some upside by finishing in the top 10 in 3 straight events to close out the fall. So when I'm looking in these two guys, Brandon, Kizzire at 94, Piercy at 95, I probably prefer Kizzire at $100 less, but Piercy to me is very much there as well. Is Piercy on your list, and where do you view him relative to Kizzire?
I don't know if he's actually on my list, but I don't have many problems with him. He's not a good Bermuda putter over a pretty large sample, and that's a problem. But, I mean, you know, last week he finished 33rd, as you mentioned. He finished 4th in strokes gained approach, did lose strokes putting, did lose strokes off the tee. So he always rides the approach game to solid finishes. For like whenever things click for Piercy, it's because of the irons, not because of the putter, not really because generally he's gaining a ton of strokes off the tee. Mm-hmm. So he's fine. He's got the two recent events in there. That's nice to see.
All righty. So it sounds like you have Kizzire higher, correct?
Yeah.
All righty, let's move down to the low pricing range. Check out some golfers who can save us some salary and help us get in Rahm and Rose if we decide to do so. Brandon, that starts off with Sungjae Im, $8,800 and really short odds at 40-1.
Yeah, Sungjae Im, I mean, look, he gained strokes with his ball striking pretty consistently. He's done it on 80% of his 30 rounds on the PGA Tour. According to Fantasy National, that's a very elite rate. It's a small sample, but that's what we have to work with Sungjae Im. Most of that comes from his off the tee play rather than the approach, which is a bit of a concern for me. But I mean, Im is still 61st in approach among the field over the past 36 rounds, 34th in greens and regulation gained, 22nd off the tee in that sample. So I have pretty much no concerns with Im at 8,800. I think he's a bit underpriced, just finished 16th at the Sony last week. So I think that Im is going to be sort of a go-to option whenever I need to sort of save some salary. He actually gained strokes off the tee a lot last week, was actually slightly negative with the approach.
Do you worry at all about Im from an ownership perspective, given that he is cheap, has short odds, and is coming off a good finish?
Yeah, a bit. It's very possible that everyone just loads up on a similar lineup of, you know, whether it's Rose or Cantlay, but they sort of plug in Rahm and then go with Swafford and Im. I think that could be, that would make sense to me as being sort of the most common three-man stack this week. So that is a concern. But again, if I'm worried about that, I will play Rom, not play Swafford and sort of pivot elsewhere and differentiate in different ways. I don't want to be scared off entirely of a good play just because of ownership. It just makes me think a little bit differently and more cautiously when I build my lineups.
I think that's the same thought for me with him, where I like him, but the thing is I don't like Swafford that much, so I'm not super worried about having those three together. So I think that allows me to be very okay with him, especially in lineups where I'm going with Rose instead of Rom and things like that. My first low price guy is going to be Jason Kokrak, and he's 100-1 to win. So like, he's probably not going to win. He's a terrible scrambler, so I know that there are limitations here, but he's $8,700 and does some things pretty well. He has played this event 6 times. He's been cut 3 times, so worth noting, but 2 of the other times were 8th place finishes, including in the current format last year. Kokrak 6th in driving distance, 33rd in approach over the past 50 rounds. Had a mediocre fall, no top 25s in 3 events after the BMW Championship, but he's $8,700, and he does get off the tee pretty well. I'm pretty okay with Jason Kokrak, Brandon. I like him less than I like Corey Connors, so we'll talk about in a second. But is Kokrak one of the golfers on your list below $9,000?
I don't think so. He just hasn't played in so long that worries me. He hasn't played in 9 weeks. I love the stats. I like his fit here. But I don't really anticipate myself playing much of a golfer who hasn't played in so long whenever I have options who have played a little bit more recently.
And again, you do have options in this range. Like, we just talked about Sungjae Im. He is $100 more. I'm going to talk about Corey Connors in a second. And Brandon, your second low price guy, Dylan Fratelli. And rust is not an issue here because he was playing last week.
Yeah, he came through well enough, 51st at the Sony Open, but he lost strokes with his approach play. It's not a good sign for me, but he also lost strokes on the green, still finished 51st, so I can sort of live with that at the price. His recent form has been solid enough to consider him at this salary, 21st at the Nedbank Golf Challenge, 7th at the DP World Tour Championship, 5th at the Afrasia Bank, cut at the South African Open, 12th at the Alfred Dunhill Championship, and again, 51st at the Sony. I'm fine with him. I was going to mention, I think my new boy this year is going to be Anders Albertsen.
Okay.
He always can pick up strokes off the tee with his approach. Dude just can't putt. He could be like a Luke List protege.
Dude just can't putt is like the motto for this show, I think.
It's like I love everything about him, but it's really hard to recommend him with too much confidence knowing what his putting is.
Just one day I'd like to fall in love with a golfer who can putt. Like, that'd be great. I know that putting is volatile, and that's probably why I don't wind up falling in love with those guys, but like, it'd be great not to have that concern as I fill out my lineup with Luke List, Kyle Stanley, and every other terrible golfer on the tour.
Hey, you could be like a Bo Hostler fan.
I'm probably okay.
A Brian Gay fan.
Nope. Keep going. I've got no interest here so far.
Brian Harmon.
I've used Brian Harmon before. Therefore, I am a Brian Harmon fan.
Adam Hadwin.
No. We did talk. I talked about it on this podcast, I guess. But
yeah,
I like Canada. So I guess that's a plus. Maybe I'm an Adam Hadwin fan. I'll talk about Corey Connors.
If you like Canada, then.
Yeah. You know.
You can keep going.
Yeah. Corey Connors.
Yeah.
Not a good play if you're looking for a floor or playing in cash games, because there is definitely some miscut to his profile. But for tournaments, I love his upside. He's coming off a 3rd-place finish last week at the Sony Open. He was also 2nd at the Sanderson Farms Championship, so he can get really good finishes. And he largely gets there with a great approach game. He is 5th in the field there over the past 50 rounds. Should also be able to score because he's 43rd in distance over that time. He is $4,700. I like the price here. I like the salary. I like the betting odds. I like the fact that he's Canadian. Like, there are a lot of boxes checked here by Corey Connors. Brandon, you mentioned you like him too. Is it the Canada angle or what puts you on Corey Connors?
You actually went double Canada with your punts with Kokrak and Connors. So
I forgot about you're right. Okay, all right. And I talked about Hadwin before. Man,
you're just Team Canada.
Yeah, I'm from Minnesota, so that's basically Canada.
Basically.
I live in upstate New York now. Like, the closest big city to me is Toronto. So, like, again, basically Canadian.
You could pair him with, I think, Nick Taylor's in the field this week.
Yeah. I had a fling with Nick Taylor at one point from PGA DFS perspective.
David Hearn, I think, is in the field.
All right, so we're going to do an all-Canada. This is like our all-Big Ten lineup from the NFL a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, and everyone's boy, Mike Weir.
I've grown sour on this all-Canada lineup. Let's forego this one for a couple of weeks.
All right, well, yeah, I mean, Connor's tied for third last week, ranked third in strokes gained approach at the Sony. He's second in greens and reg, third in strokes gained off the tee over the past 36. I mean, that's enough for me at that price. I like Connors a lot this week. I don't think I'm alone in that. I don't think we are alone in that. Obviously, you mentioned him, but I do think that he could carry some ownership. But, you know, with Swafford there, it's going to be not every golfer can be super chalky, sure, especially in such a large field. So that helps with that ownership dispersal.
With Corey Connors, I mentioned I'm wary of him in cash games. Would you echo that sentiment?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I still think the floor is high enough because he's so much better than like a lot of the golfers in this field.
Sure.
He did just play. I mean, he's not like the best putter, which is always sort of the case with some of these like lower guys who, if you're a low priced pick on FanDuel, you're basically either a good ball striker and a bad putter, or the inverse.
Yeah.
For Connors, it's that he's a good ball striker, and I much prefer that. So I actually think his floor is kind of high.
Okay,
relative
cool
to the price.
All right, lock him in then. Bobble hat winner, Corey Connors. Let's move now to our picks to win for this weekend, Brandon. I'm going to go one golfer, whoever you want. Should we exclude Ramen Rose or no?
We probably should.
All right, we'll exclude Ramen Rose, and we'll go one guy 50-1 or longer to win. Who do you have in both those tiers?
So for us, it doesn't really matter if the pick wins. It's more about rank for our head-to-head contest. So I'm going to go with Aaron Wise.
Okay, you left me Patrick Cantlay, and I'm going to take Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah, I should have just took Cantlay.
No, you shouldn't have. It's okay. I'll take Cantlay. So it's Cantlay versus Wise there, and then 50-1 or longer. Who are you leaning towards there?
Oh my gosh.
I think it's better this week than it usually is at 50-1 or longer.
Sure. Corey Connors.
Okay. Then I'll take Neiman.
Oh, I forgot he was. All right.
Too late.
this was not a good week for me.
Neiman and Cantlay are both missing the cut. Lock it in right now.
Oh man. Those are like my two favorite picks relative to the field. This is why I need to take notes in advance and plan things out.
Yeah, no, the winner's segment would not be good if we plan things out. Like, I think, well, that's kind of the allure of it. It's just like flying by the seat of your pants and like, oh my gosh, who do I pick? Pat Perez.
Yeah, well, last week I had Bryson, who finished 10th, and Ian Poulter, who was 33rd, and you had Gary Woodland and Sam Ryder.
Oh.
I just wanted to, you know, remind. I needed some sort of victory.
That was stupid. Man. I also used Adam Scott, and he was like 8 over and missed the cut, so that was good. I wound up being okay because I had Bryson, but like, you know, it could have been a lot better if I didn't.
Right. So I have Aaron Wise. Who else did I took Patrick Cantlay and Joaquin Neiman, right?
No. You took Aaron Wise and Corey Connors. You did use Team Canada against me, which is upsetting, but like,
whatever. This is going to be rough.
All right, Cantlay and Neiman, 1-2 finish. Bring it on, boys. Let's do this. Brandon, I think this is a fun week because you kind of can tell where the ownership will be. But there are also fun pivots away from that, at least in the lower pricing range, whereas things may be more set up top. But a fun week.
Yeah. I mean, like, there are going to be popular picks this week. There are, of course, you know, chalky picks every single week. But, you know, specifically for this week, it's a bit top heavy. And then there are some of those value picks who pop. But you can differentiate a lot of different ways. It doesn't take, you know, playing a $7,000 guy you haven't heard of just to differentiate. So you can do a lot of different things. Just know that you don't have to play the most obvious picks because it's golf and that just doesn't always.
And you have good options outside of those. Yeah. Too. We'll be back with you on Thursday because we're going to be setting up for NFL Championship Weekend, getting you set for the two-game slate. We'll probably have some single-game discussion in there as well on Thursday to get you set for the AFC and the NFC Championships. That is on Thursday, roughly the same time as usual for our NFL podcast, letting you know which guys are on our list for this weekend. You can get that by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed. That is on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I am at Gudula13, GDULA13. Just don't ask me why I picked Aaron Wise over Patrick Cantlay and Corey Connors over Joaquin Neiman.
I think you felt bad for my picks last week and wanted to give me a little olive branch.
Yeah, maybe that was in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to complain. Believe me, I'll take that happily. So thank you. Thank you, thank you. I am at Jim Sannes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck with your PGA DFS lineups for the Desert Classic and enjoy filling out those rosters. Talk to you again later in the week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by Number Fire.